On this episode of the Edge Podcast, ClearEdge CEO and founder Leslie Vickery interviews Jordan McGuire, managing director of people analytics firm Talent Today. Leslie and Jordan discuss the challenges of transitioning from a service to a product-based organization, how stepping out of the Midwest changed Jordan's life forever, and the all-too-common struggle to find work-life balance. We hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi, everyone. This is Leslie Vickery. I am the CEO and founder of ClearEdge Marketing, and it is my pleasure to welcome Jordan McGuire, Managing Director of Talent Today, to the Edge Podcast. Welcome, Jordan.
Thank you so much for having me, Leslie.
Jordan, we first met over 4 years ago, and really it seems like a lifetime ago based on all of the changes that you've personally gone through from completing your executive MBA from Notre Dame. In fact, I remember sitting with you at lunch at one of our favorite spots in Chicago, Beatrix, chatting about whether or not you should do it, and you did, and moving to Paris then to take over management of a company Medix acquired, which is Talent Today. You have not slowed down for a second since we met. Oh, and you continue to be recognized for your work, including staffing industry analyst 40 under 40 list. Extraordinary background. I'm so happy to have you here today. I consider you a good friend in the industry and just look forward to our conversation. So with that, Jordan, I really want to start by talking about your career path pre-Talent Today, especially because like me, you got your start in marketing. So tell us a little bit about your path. And for those who aren't familiar with Medix, a little bit about the company.
Yeah, sure. No problem. Career path stories are always fun and interesting because you have those people that start out knowing exactly what they want to do from a young age, and you talk to them today and they're living out those goals and plans and doing exactly that. And then you have others who have a little bit more of an unorthodox or unpredictable path. And I certainly fall in the latter. For instance, if you would have asked me back when I was first going to school, if I was going to be in marketing, I would have said I was going to be a lawyer. And if you would have asked me if I was going to be managing a software company in Paris when I was growing up in Wisconsin, I would have absolutely said that you were crazy. What I did know about my interests and strengths back then was that I was passionate about writing and persuasive communication. And that's really, I would say, what led me to launch a career in marketing at Medix. And to answer your question, Leslie, a little bit about Medix, it's a staffing company based out of Chicago, but we do have offices across the country and we're specialized in the healthcare, science, and IT industries. Back when I was graduating, staffing companies were not nearly as prolific as they are today, at least in my circles of friends. I really didn't know what staffing was. And what the company did was not evident at all from the research that I had done from looking at Medix's social media presence and looking at the website. It was still really unclear what Medix did. I have absolutely no poker face. And as a 20-year-old interviewing with the CEO of a national company, I just told Andrew, the CEO, my now boss, in my interview that I admittedly was very unclear about what Medix did and the value that it was bringing its customers and that I was confused by the marketing materials. He just looked at me and said, well, can you fix it? And I said, I can try. So that was the inception of my internship and the start of my journey at Medix. I was brought on as a marketing intern, first to revamp the website that I had, you know, criticized in that first meeting with the CEO. And then I held some other roles inside the company when Medix, like many other companies, saw a bunch of turbulence during the 2009 recession. During that time, it was kind of an all hands on deck mentality at the company. And I stepped in to fill some needs in payroll and compliance. And I even spent 6 months at the front desk before finally settling back into marketing and starting to grow that team. And there wasn't a marketing team at that point. So it started off with me. And then we were able to grow it over the next several years of my career. I also, during that time, I had the privilege of partnering with some other brilliant minds inside of Medix to build up another completely new division to the company. And that was the Talent Innovation Department. That department was devoted to looking into innovative strategies and technologies for attracting and engaging talent. So a lot of the work that that department did centralized on assessments and the power of understanding soft skills in the talent lifecycle. That, in an essence, is what inevitably led me to meet Talent Today and the Medix team to make the acquisition.
It's fascinating to hear your background, Jordan, and think about all of the different hats that you wore. It makes sense now, thinking about you taking over as managing director of talent today, to someone who maybe didn't know that and thinking the career path of marketing and what happens outside of marketing and do you need to get that P&L experience and operations in different areas. I also love that Andrew, who I know very well, has that entrepreneur's hat. And when he sees talent, and obviously you coming in and right out of the gate telling him what you thought, you know, he's really been, and we'll talk a little bit later about mentorship and sponsors and so forth, but to give you that opportunity out of the gate and then to think about all of the years that you've been there and now venturing off, you're back, but all of that experience ultimately led you to the path where you landed in Paris. So Medix acquired Talent Today and you were tapped to run the company. So you uprooted your life, Jordan, you moved. And just as you were getting to know your new team and learn all about the business, the pandemic hit. Talk about resilience. And I remember talking to you a few times from your apartment in Paris and just the challenges that you were facing there, not being at home. So before we go into a little bit about that, tell us what made you decide to go for it. When Andrew said, we've acquired this company, and Jordan, by the way, I'm plucking you out of marketing and need you to go to Paris to run it. What made you decide to say yes?
Like I was mentioning, my career path up to that point had given me a lot more firsthand exposure to this world of psychometrics and soft skills companies than a lot of the other people inside of Medix. So just by virtue of, you know, the area that I was focused on, I had a really good understanding of what Medix's broader goals were in that space. So Andrew asked me if I was willing to explore that path, and I absolutely said yes. Professionally, it made sense for the company. But on a personal level, as you mentioned, I was at that point in time completing my executive MBA at Notre Dame when this opportunity arose. And the perspective that I was getting from the program made me really passionate around kind of challenging myself to scale my skills across the other areas of operations, not just in marketing or in innovation. So I saw this as an opportunity and a challenge to not just help the company, but, you know, help me grow as well.
I love that. And just to have that level of an experience within the same company doesn't happen that often. So you really were fortunate to be able to make that move. I know as a big fan of yours on the sidelines, I was cheering for you thinking, oh my gosh, what a phenomenal opportunity to be able to move and live in Paris and run this company. And I know how much you loved data and analytics and so forth. What would you say surprised you the most in taking on this new challenge?
Yeah, everything was a surprise, jumping to a brand new company in a new industry in a new country. So I knew that it was going to be highly challenging, but rewarding. Andrew always speaks of this, you know, making sure that you have beginner's mind and that every single day you're treating it like it's the first day of something brand new, which was extremely easy for me to do because I was a beginner. I had built up this decade of experience in an area, in a company, in talent acquisition at Medix. And I had felt, you know, in a lot of ways when I was moving to Paris that I was starting at square one, even if that wasn't entirely the case. Jumping from a service-based company to a product company that had challenges that I wasn't expecting. And then going from a 400-person company, Medix has grown since then, but at that point in time, it was a 400-person company. And moving from that to a startup environment that had its own learning curve as well. But the biggest challenge I would have to say is probably the most obvious one. And that was the cultural nuances between French and American perspectives on not just business, but life. And you know, there are fundamental differences in work-life balance, values, communication styles. So even though those differences could have obviously been anticipated, just for me personally, but also the Talent Today team as a whole, we really needed to figure out how to best collaborate together through a lot of patience and trial and error.
I feel like everything you just mentioned is the makings of a business book or case study that you, being a writer and loving to write, may be able to start penning. It was like everything you mentioned was a chapter out of a book, like, oh my gosh, how did she handle this? Or what did she do? And what were the things that she learned in that specific instance? Again, the key word that keeps coming to mind for me is just resilience. As you continue to learn the business aspect, the cultural aspects, everything about it, now you're overseas and throw on top of it a global pandemic. What was it like for you and your husband being overseas during COVID?
So it started off probably the same as being stateside, just the same as everybody else. It started out with this state of not really comprehending entirely what was happening and just packing up some extra supplies from the office with the intention to return to work in 2 weeks or so. And obviously, just like a lot of places across the globe, things just started to escalate quickly. And I remember hearing when we were sitting in Paris about the toilet paper crisis back in the United States and kind of laughing it off. And I remember then going to Monoprix with my husband, that's a grocery store there, just a few days later for a routine grocery trip. And I told him to go get toilet paper and I was going to go get pasta. And, you know, we met in the middle of the store and just stared at each other because everything was gone. You know, obviously, like I said, things continued to escalate and European countries started to completely shut down. And when I say shut down, it's not just the businesses, but the streets. So for 2 months, we were under a complete lockdown where you couldn't go outside to even let the dog out without what they called an attestation form showing that you were within 1 kilometer of your residence. And you had to have a timestamp on it because you weren't allowed to be out of your home for more than 1 hour a day. So on a personal level, it was extremely crazy, but it was even more crazy as an employer. So during that time, and I don't speak French. So being in France, trying to interpret French laws as new mandates are coming in and opening and closing and then reopening the office throughout the summer and trying to figure out the best way to keep the team safe and healthy, but also unified during a pandemic. Again, it's lots of challenges that were shared by employers globally, and we certainly felt it at Talent Today.
Wow, that's quite a story, Jordan. And like I said, I remember talking to you about it and just having this vision of isolation when you were talking about not being able to walk your dog and go to the park even or do different things. I, at least in Chicago, while we were on lockdown, I could still go running in the street and, you know, do what we needed to do outside. But now this vision, toilet paper and pasta going in the store. And I did the same thing. I ran into the store and I had never seen anything like it. It was completely empty. And I started grabbing, there were like 3 things left in the freezer section. And I remember just grabbing random things and coming home and my husband being like, what did you do? I'm like, not what I did. Everyone took everything. We have nothing. We've got to get on Amazon, Instacart, wherever, whatever we can do to help ourselves. But, you know, again, we were here, you were overseas and what a story. Thank you for sharing that. When you look back on it, now, again, you're back stateside here and you've since gone back to Paris, picked up the rest of your things. You've come back. You were able to get your pets home safely, your family, everyone here, and you've got your team set up there. I don't even know that you've had time yet, Jordan, to even reflect on the time that you spent there. And in retrospect, what are you most proud of?
Honestly, we talk a lot at Medics about unintended consequences and how sometimes when tough or challenging experiences confront us, that there are new perspectives or benefits that emerge that you hadn't intended or expected. I mentioned earlier the challenges of breaking down those cultural barriers when first arriving in France, but I would say one of the unintended consequences of COVID and one of the things that I'm most proud of is how the team retained and strengthened the cultures during that time. And you know, you can package a lot of things about a business, like their processes and strategies, and implement them and bring them into another place. But one thing that it's a lot harder to do that with is a company's culture and values, especially when you are building that extension of your company in another country. Medics, from the get-go, was really intentional in the due diligence process prior to the acquisition and vetting out and making sure that the partners that we were considering, you know, matched our values. And Talent Today absolutely did. But I would say throughout that craziness of 2020, we continued to break down those barriers and reinforce the culture, whether it was virtual Halloween happy hours. And seems obvious in retrospect, but they don't celebrate Halloween in France. So we got to enlighten them on that. We taught everybody the art of the Chicago style hot dog. I couldn't tell if they were delighted or appalled, but we looked for philanthropic ways to apply our product when the world just wasn't ready to be sold to again. You know, there was a period during the summer when that's just the last thing that people wanted to hear from you. So we really locked arms during that time to think of innovative ways to grow together, but also to serve our clients. And we emerged from all of that even more aligned globally, I would say, on the big stuff. And I'm extremely proud of that.
That's incredible. And I know I've had the privilege of working with medics and seeing your leadership team interact firsthand. So when you mention culture and trying to bring a piece of that and make sure when you did the acquisition that that was very top of mind, which when you hear of bad situations or acquisitions that didn't work, a lot of times it does boil down to culture. And it's hard to tell culture until you work together hand in hand. But you really do have something quite special as a company. Especially your leadership team. When I interact with them, I'm always so impressed by the way you work together, communicate with each other, hold each other accountable. What has kept you at Medics for, and you mentioned from internship all the way to where you are at this point in your career? What has kept you there?
It's an interesting question because lots of times when someone has been at one place their entire career, it can be an indicator of complacency. And that's kind of actually the opposite of why I've stuck with Medics, because it refuses to let me be complacent, obviously. So Andrew told me probably around my fifth year at Medics, and he loves analogies. You probably know this, Leslie, but he told me that I better get comfortable in shoes that don't fit because he was always going to test my limits and put me in shoes that were too big for my feet. And he said that his commitment to me as my boss was that anytime he thought I was growing into my shoes to be prepared, that he was probably planning some sort of expansion or had something up his sleeve. So in some ways that can be exhausting. So there were times that I felt like, dang it, I was just really getting good at my job. But that notion of getting comfortable with being uncomfortable has been an absolute game changer in understanding what I'm capable of doing and pushing my limits. And it's a huge part of why I keep investing in my time in Medics.
It's a really good analogy. I'm going to have to use that one. But I can appreciate where on one hand it can be exhausting, but on the other hand, there's never a question of what the future holds for you. You may question, I don't know exactly what it is, but you know, there's opportunity for you ahead. What is it, would you say, about the leadership team that makes it so unique just in the way you've all kind of come together, some newer, some grown up together in the company and the business? What makes it so unique?
I mean, you heard me talk about this at length a little bit earlier, but honestly, it's our values. So there are lots of leadership teams out there that are aligned on goals for the company, but not necessarily in values. And who you want to be and how you want to behave as an organization on the way to achieving those goals. And to me, that's what makes all the difference with my colleagues at Medics, because we can disagree, and we disagree all of the time, seriously. We have very different personalities and people at different stages in their lives with different motivations and priorities. And those differences are healthy and productive and breed innovation and ideas. But if we aren't united on the big stuff, kind of the so what, then I don't believe that we would be able to accomplish what we have so far.
Well, you've mentioned a little bit, Jordan, on your path where you went back and got your executive MBA from Notre Dame right before moving and taking the role in Paris. And I remember your graduation and when everything happened, and it seems like yesterday talking to you about just whether or not you should even go back to school. What made you decide to enroll and move forward after so many years in your career?
You know, first off, to be fully transparent, I am a huge nerd. I always have been and I always will be. And I loved school and I loved learning. And I'm one of the crazy ones that was actually jealous watching my husband go through law school. And I just always knew I wasn't done yet. It didn't feel right to be done yet. And I had been tinkering with the idea of going back to school for several years. And even though I wanted to do it personally, I just always told myself I wouldn't go for it and interrupt my career unless I really thought that it could improve my impact and my performance for the organization rather than just something that I felt like I needed to do individually. And so when I started to run some of those extra departments and when I started to need to have more of a financial acumen to participate fully in those decisions that I was becoming a vital part of making, I decided that it was time for me to head back to the classroom.
So what advice would you have for others who are considering a like program?
I'd say be nice to your friends in accounting because you're going to need their help at some point. I definitely did. But in seriousness, these programs, or at least the one at Mendoza, was extremely exhaustive and intense. And I saw classmates around me that did not have the full support from their network of people at home or at work, helping them balance a full-time program on top of a full-time job. And I know that it was hard enough for me, even though I did have that support, you know, helping prop me up during those tough times. And I can't imagine how tough it was for some of those classmates. So my best advice is I'd make sure that you're doing it for the right reasons and not just because you're bored, because there are way less stressful ways to fill your time, trust me. And to be transparent about the commitment that you're making with your friends and your family and your coworkers, because having that supportive and understanding, you know, army backing you during that will certainly help make it a little bit more manageable.
And like you said, your husband, who is an attorney, is now getting his own executive MBA. So it's a family of continued learners. And he's fortunate to have someone who actually went through the program, because you can be much more understanding even of what he's going through too at the time. We'll talk a little bit about that here in a second when we talk about work-life balance. In the meantime, I want to ask you a question that comes up quite often on our podcast. And as you know, I'm one of the co-founders of a group called ARA, which is Attract, Retain, and Advance Women in Technology. And we have about 6,000 people who have been part of our program over the past 8+ years. And one of the things that we've done over time is create this annual Women in Tech survey. Every single time we do the survey, confidence is the number one piece of advice both men and women have for women, and that's to have more confidence, the number one piece of advice. So Jordan, you were on a fast track from intern up to running a company in Paris. Did you always look in the mirror and feel confident? Have you ever kind of felt like you weren't good enough? And if you did, how did you overcome that self-doubt?
Yeah, did I always look in the mirror and feel confident? For anybody that knows me, yeah, definitely not. So honestly, this is something that I work through every day. Confidence is a constant battle and a lot of work, and has always been something that I've had to be very, very purposeful at instilling in myself. And I remember one of my very first big speeches in my career at a leadership meeting, and I was terrified. And when I'm terrified, I talk to my mom, and I had given her a call before, and I told her that my plan was to fake it until I make it. And she brought up a phrase that I had also heard in a TED talk once, which was to fake it until you become it. And there's a lot of information and rhetoric out there about the imposter syndrome. And if you haven't heard of it, I would look it up, because it's this tendency, and lots of people suffer from it, especially females. But to feel like even when you've worked really, really hard and you've achieved something, that you don't deserve it or you don't belong there. And I personally am constantly fighting that urge to feel like I just got lucky or that I'm a fraud. So it's important to remind yourself that as you scale, that I wasn't pretending to run marketing. I was running marketing, and I don't pretend to run a company in Paris. I actually do it. To acknowledge that you belong where you are and you deserve what you've earned. It sounds easy enough, but it's a surprisingly difficult thing for many of us. And it takes a lot of conscious thought and surrounding yourself with the right kind of support to overcome that.
Amy Cuddy, Power Posing.
You know it. I knew you would.
Yeah, I am a huge believer, and I've used her power posing for myself, quite frankly. I think I've told you the story of walking into a meeting, and it was overseas. I was the only woman in the room, and I was there to moderate it. And I looked around the table and thought, oh my gosh, they're probably wondering, who is she? She's American. Why is she here? What is she doing? Honestly, I was in my own head. They may not have even been thinking that, but I had to excuse myself. I went into the bathroom, sat in the stall with my hands on hips, thinking of channeling my best Amy Cuddy. Yep. And just remembered I was there for a reason, and went in and had no problem after that. My sister Vicky had told me this saying called the evil DJ. And it's also from a Sheryl Sandberg Lean In talk. And basically what it is that song that keeps playing in your head over and over again. But in this case, it's your voice telling you that you're not good enough, or why are you there? And it's figuring out at what point, like, where does this stem from? So yes, you can certainly turn it off in a moment, but usually it stems from somewhere. And if you can get to the root of that and really overcome some of that anxiety or confidence issues, it really can be a turning point for your career and your personal life. So I really love that saying, because I think of it often if I catch myself doing it. But over time, having these different tools, and I know you, Jordan, you've got mentors and obviously people within your own company and a supportive spouse, like, you've got a lot of things going for you to help you. And you're also just kick ass at what you do. Obviously, we've heard your story here. So the more you can believe it, the more you see it, and then the more other people can say it. And the reason I was thinking about this when I asked the question, do you look in the mirror and feel confident? It's because since I was younger, there's four girls in my family. My dad always said, when you look in the mirror, you need to love yourself most and first. And it just always stuck in my head. Like, you really have to have that comes from the inner self, and you've got to look in the mirror and love the person looking back. So what other advice, we kind of rattled off a few things, but would you have for other people or women rising up the ranks to kind of turn off that inner monologue and just go for it?
Yeah, I mean, we both mentioned it, right? So oftentimes it is a lot in your head. And this is super topical for me right now, because every quarter for our executive planning meetings, we have to read a book as a leadership team. And we have our Q2 planning meeting, I can hardly believe it, starting tomorrow. And the book for this quarter was Positive Intelligence. And I still have two chapters yet to read before our meetings start tomorrow. So hopefully our executive coach isn't listening, but the book, it's all on this topic, and it's largely about kind of quieting that negative narrative or that story that we tell ourselves that gets in the way of our own success. And the book is resonating a lot with me, and I've been reaching out to our executive coach, thanking him for recommending it, because a lot of the advice is around conditioning yourself to identify what they call internal saboteurs in your brain. And those are things like personal judgment or over-rationalization or perfectionism that are inherently distorting the story inside your head and causing you to not reach your full potential. So again, this is something I am still reading about to this day, and I am working on every moment, because I do believe in the power behind that self-fulfilling prophecy and the importance of amplifying positive thoughts. These saboteurs, they can disguise themselves as the reason why you're successful. And if I'm not judging myself and I'm not hard on myself, would I be, you know, reaching the success that I am today? But the book is all about being able to see through that facade and being able to recognize that these are things that are diminishing you, and being able to recognize that and then build with a clear mind and build that confidence.
Jordan, what was the name of the book again?
Positive Intelligence.
All right. Positive Intelligence. I'm asking because I'm guessing a lot of people will want to get their hands on that, myself included. So, you know, I'm a huge fan of mentoring. Ara's original intention was mentoring and the value of it. And again, with the Women in Tech survey we do, a lot of times women aren't sure where to find a mentor or how to go about doing that. I've benefited from really strong mentors in my life, and I know you have as well. So I was hoping maybe you could share a story perhaps about mentors in your career and just how they've helped you along the way, and maybe what advice you'd have for others who are seeking mentorship and aren't sure where to turn.
For sure. I've had various mentors throughout my career, and I would say my best advice is to recognize and be cognizant that one size doesn't fit all, and you might need different mentors to serve different goals and build on different skills. When I'm trying to exercise my interpersonal skills as a leader, I relied on mentorship from my boss and even my mom. But then when I'm trying to build up confidence as a woman leader, I look to strong female entrepreneurs and leaders. And, you know, Leslie, you're actually somebody that I do consider a mentor and a role model for me over the years in that capacity. And then when I was moving into the product vertical, I found mentors and coaches in the tech space that I've leaned on. So I'm right there with you, Leslie, that I believe in the power of mentorship. And I would just advise people seeking to capture some of that power to sit down and think about what they really want to work on, what their goals are, and then realize that sometimes it takes a network of mentors rather than just one to really get to where you want to go.
And thank you, Jordan, for the mention. What I will say is it's important to think about peer mentors as well. So like for you and I, at certain points, we're like, hey, could you grab lunch? Do you want to go grab a drink? Mm-hmm. We need to catch up. Could we have a call? Let's Zoom. And finding ways that we can spend that time together and know that each time we're going to pick a topic and find a way to help each other, which I love. Kind of having that group of people you can turn to at any time is really critical. And to remember, it doesn't need to be formal, but you really need to reach out and get that help. It can go a long way. One of the things, Jordan, that you and I think could help each other with is the topic of work-life balance. oftentimes on our podcast, we're getting advice from guests about what they do to find balance. And I know this is something that a lot of people are struggling with right now. If you're working and living in the same place, it's really hard to shut down and find that balance. It's hard to escape and go anywhere. So sometimes I'll just say, well, I'm sitting here anyway. I'm just going to power up that laptop again, which is like 4 feet from me, and get to work. But I also realize that I have to do a much better job at a couple of things. One is just being present in my life, and two is saying no. And I just, again, said yes to a couple of things that I probably should have said no to. And it stresses me out because I know I'm doing something that will benefit other people. But what I'm realizing is oftentimes it's at the expense of two really important things, which would be myself. I love to work out and spend time working out. COVID's impacted that a little bit, not only because of the gym closings, but because I feel like I need to be camera ready more than usual, which I'm starting to just let that go and say, I'm not going to be on camera right now so I can fit in the workout. But the other piece is not being present with my family, even though we're all in the home together. If I'm up working late or just focusing on other things, that means I'm not putting the most important people in my life first. And that's my husband and my son. I know that there are things that I need to continue to work on to find that balance. And I'd love to hear what you've been up to lately on that front. And then I have an ask for you once you're done.
Okay. Well, you know, what have I been up to on that front is struggling right there along with you, Leslie, and probably with the vast majority of people, because I've always struggled with that same situation, even before COVID, and COVID just amplified it. But I've always prided myself in being a yes person. And I think that it has gotten me to a lot of the places that I've gotten to in my career for saying yes. And people herald you for being a yes person. And it's considered to be such a great quality in a person. And I know that I get a lot of credit for being that yes person, but it can be addictive. And, you know, it's hard to turn off. Human beings want to be consistent. And if throughout your life, you've been regarded as the person who's going to say yes, and will never let you down, it's really difficult to set those boundaries. And I constantly am struggling with it. And I'm right there with you. The lines between work and life have been completely blurred throughout COVID, and could definitely use some pointers there myself, to be honest.
Okay, so that's my ask, because I kind of knew this going in because I know you well and I know myself well. Teresa Carroll was a guest on our podcast, and she turned me on to a book called How Women Rise. And I've since heard her speak on the topic in the book, I think maybe 4 or 5 times. One of the key things that the book talks about is the art of saying no and not being that yes person, and have people see you as that yes, but how you can overcome that. So I highly suggest taking a look at that book. That said, they talk about having accountability partners. So picking a couple of things that you can work on to improve, and by saying it out loud that it's a challenge. So you and I are both struggling with work-life balance right now. Sometimes we're pretty good at it. Sometimes we're terrible at it. Right now, it's a struggle, something we both admitted we needed to work on. By saying it out loud, I'm hoping that you will be my accountability partner, and that when we do catch up, we hold each other accountable. If I see something that you're doing, I'll say something. And likewise, if you see something I'm doing, please say something. And perhaps this is something that we can work on improving together. So are you game? Will you be my accountability partner?
Yeah, this will be fun.
I know.
We should have like a buzzer.
Now it's a competition. Look out, teams. We are going to be holding each other accountable. And I just look forward to having that additional support system in you, Jordan. So thank you. All right. So with that, we are running out of time. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions. So one, real quickly, you obviously still have a hand in marketing. What excites you most about marketing in our industry?
I mentioned that I got into marketing in the first place because I love communication in general, and I love storytelling and educating and getting people excited and solving their problems. So I love what marketing stands for, but what makes it really exciting right now is the advancements in technology and automation and how that's impacting marketing. And as a marketer in today's world, you have access to more tools and data and insight about your buyers than ever before, and it can be overwhelming and exciting at the same time because you've never really had a better opportunity or access to really reach people and impact your business than you do today. That's the wave that I'm riding right now in the exciting world of marketing.
Yeah, I agree. The tools and technology available to our industry right now, it's incredible. Such a great opportunity. Okay, a few rapid fire questions to close out this podcast. Are you ready?
Sure.
Okay. Turning point that changed your life forever.
Changed my life forever. So dramatic. Okay. So moving out of the Midwest, I would say, while my husband was in the military and we both grew up in small, small towns in Wisconsin, I had, 1,400 person towns, and moving to Chicago was honestly the biggest leap that I thought that I would do in my life. But when I got married, my husband and I packed up and we moved to Georgia for his career and we bounced around the United States, and just getting out of that comfort zone and seeing new places and eventually moving out of the country, it was that first step out of the Midwest that I think really changed my perspective on society and my goals.
Excellent. Okay. Best piece of advice you ever received?
Luckily, I've got it sitting in front of me on my desk, so it's an easy one. I started battling with anxiety way back in school, and my mom gave me this little plaque that has the Serenity Prayer on it. And if you're not familiar with it, it's really relevant whether you're religious or not. It's essentially a calling to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. It was very powerful advice for me in giving myself grace for things out of my control, but also empowering me to take action.
I love it. Thank you for sharing that. I feel like I need that in front of me every day too.
I'll send you one.
Oh my gosh. All right. One thing people would be surprised to find out about you.
This is tough. I mentioned I'm a nerd, so maybe this isn't a surprise at all, but I am a huge Harry Potter fan. And for anyone that's interested, I'm a Ravenclaw.
Oh gosh, I'm going to have to read up on this. So that is great. I did not know that about you. So I look forward to finding out more about this Ravenclaw, Jordan. Okay, Jordan, thank you so much for joining me today on the Edge podcast and sharing your story and your advice. You've given us all a lot to think about. If someone would like to connect with you, what's your preferred method of outreach?
Probably easiest via email. It's j.mcguire, MCGUIRE, at talenttoday.com.
Excellent. Jordan, thank you again so much.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Edge. If you enjoy this podcast, please rate and subscribe to it in iTunes. Feel free to email Leslie at lvickery@clearedgemarketing.com and let us know if you have questions, would like to be a guest or suggest a potential guest, or share topics you'd like to see in the future.